this way? I don't know. I'll go back this way. So here we are in the Geese Field. This is approximately about 8 acres of grass. This was like a...
The noise of them.
And there was Christmas trees down the far side, and they go in through the Christmas trees and keep that clip nice as well.
A bit of turkey talk there. Well, goose talk, I guess. Goose talk, 106 to 108. Kind of works. We're on our way to Mapworth Farm.
Very exciting.
There's only a limited amount of time, as we have been told, to come out here because the season is, let's say it's dictated by calendars, isn't it?
And all of these beautiful birds that we're about to meet are not going to be alive for much longer, so it's time to meet them and to hear their story. And we have been planning this episode for quite a while, so I'm glad it's finally happening.
Yeah, we're very excited to meet the girls, as Owen would call them. If you're wondering what the clip was, social media, if you follow us personally at Gastrogaze, you'll know it's a huge deal for us. It's a great way of communicating, it's a great way of advertising and marketing, and Mapworth Farm in particular. For years, and I'm talking years and years and years, even when we lived in London, we used to watch these videos of the turkeys on the farm as he has a cup of coffee in the morning and goes out to check on the girls, as he calls them. So it's very nice to be able to see it in real life. Now, we're not the only special guest this week. Dustin the Turkey was out earlier on in the week, of Eurovision fame, lest we forget.
I think so.
Okay. We're probably more famous for Eurovision than he is anyway. But that's that.
I think he's more infamous for Eurovision, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
But I also think that we probably are not dressed appropriately for heading out to a turkey farm, that's how we operate. So
you're currently in loafers.
I'm in loafers and jeans and I guess an old coat, so I guess I'm prepared for the top half of me, but for the bottom half, not so much.
So
you're in some kind of combination of like a Zara jumper.
Actually, COS.
A COS jumper and some kind of formal suit, pants that you probably wore at Christmas a few years ago, and then big shit kicker boots.
Which are also covered in shit, basically. Yeah. So
If you half us and then put us together, at least one of us is prepared.
And this is the usual thing. I think we normally edit it out when we go to farms and stuff. We normally edit out the interviewees' comments of, oh, would you look at the state of you? Do you ever come dressed appropriately for these things? And we're like, no, we don't. Anyway, thank you again for sharing and reviewing. Got some lovely reviews on iTunes lately. Please do keep them coming. We are 40 episodes, 30 something episodes into Chew the Fat now, and you know, we just like a little bit of a boost from time to time, whether that's a tweet out, a sharing on your social media, a review, anything like that, just to help keep this podcast all about Irish food up there on the charts from time to time. Anyway, let's get to this week's episode. So we're going to just pop the directions into the GPS because we haven't a clue where we're going. And here's the theme tune. So in these weeks just before Christmas, it is time for Turkey Talk. And actually for the two of us, this is our first time ever on a turkey farm, so it's quite a unique experience for us. We're delighted to be guests of Olivia Duff and Owen Sharkey here at Mapworth Farm. We've known the two of them for quite a while, in particular Olivia, who, local to us, works as a great ambassador for not only the Boyne Valley, but also for Ireland as a whole when it comes to food tourism. So it's a delight that we finally get here.
So we only farm about 12 acres here. But we farm, we've another 10 acres that we farm, and then we have lots of kind of family spots as well that we take. So
you take a shortcut through the pig pen.
No worries.
Okay.
glad you've taken your moccasins off.
Yeah.
You go on in close to the fence.
Close to the fence there. I'm going to put my recorder in my pocket. Oh, that is an electric fence. It's not a lying sign.
He's not joking.
Along the...
Look at them.
Look at them. Hello. Oh, they responded.
They can step out over the fence.
They're like, no, no. Sorry. No.
Just give it a little while, because if you do it too much, then they kind of hop onto it.
Yeah.
So we'll do it in a little while again.
So, are they hungry?
No, they're just really, really inquisitive. And you're going to just accept the fact you're going to get pecked now.
Okay.
But like, it doesn't hurt or anything.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Come on, we'll walk down here a bit. We get these in the first week of July, which works very well with the mobile farm because... it's very seasonal. So as soon as the schools finish, the following week, then we have the turkey chicks arriving.
Yeah.
As you've probably seen from following us, they're very fragile and very delicate. For the first 3 to 4 weeks, they spend inside with heat. And then for the next couple of weeks, then you'd let them out for an hour at a time, if only if it's dry. Because if they get wet, they're very fragile and they'll get sick. So it's a lot of mind and looking after them. And then they're out. So they're out more or less from 5 weeks on. So, as you see here, we've pumpkins at the moment. You'll see a lot of the things on the ground here. These are all the husks from corns. We feed them corns as well. Any carrots we throw in are completely disappeared.
Yeah.
So we're giving a variety of feeds to add more flavour to them.
Yeah.
You also notice as well is that their beaks, the size of their beaks, like this girl here, they have a very pointed beak. Mm. And that's what you want to look for, because I'd say that about 80-90% of the turkeys in Ireland are actually de-beaked.
Okay.
So their beak is cut off. But if they're de-beaked, they can't eat grass, they can't eat pumpkins, can't eat carrots, apples, all that.
Basically,
corns.
Strength is taken away from them.
Yeah, it'd be like pulling off your fingernails and trying to pick up something off the ground. It doesn't work. So
they're ready to peck us. I think they start pecking Patrick, actually.
Yeah, and it.
I think they like me.
Yeah, they're very curious.
Yeah.
They're very curious. As well as that, we buy them all insects as hens.
Yeah.
Hen turkeys. So, part of the reason for this is because the hens give you a much nicer meat, a much fleshier carcass, much bigger breasts. Mm. And the reason for that is because the hen turkey has to sit on eggs for 28 days, and it's basically 28 days of a fast.
All right.
So, but the male never has to fast for such a prolonged period, and then he'll never build up the body reserve to last such a sustained fast. So they'll obviously carry far more flesh on them. So that's why we have, if you look around here, you'll see, we'll try to spot, there is one or two males.
Mm.
I don't see them here at the moment.
If you see, run.
Why?
Okay. For your life.
Why?
Although, well, the males can be a bit territorial.
Yeah.
Right. They can be a little bit aggressive. Yeah. But like all animals, all males are, like, you'd never trust a bull or a ram or a stallion.
Why
would you trust a male turkey? They will peck and attack you.
I just have to say, this is probably the most women we've ever been surrounded by in our life, so it's a very unique experience.
The males are very important, because if I just had a couple of hundred women in one room, they'd kill each other.
Okay.
Right. So you need to have a couple of males in it to keep manners on them.
Yeah.
We found a male!
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
does it?
Yes, I see. The
see with the big the blue head on it. Yeah. Different colour head on it. Yeah.
Okay.
They
like my coat.
They sure do. They're pecking away at it.
Yeah.
They're very inquisitive, though. The second they see even the car coming along, they're like...
Yes, they're very vocal.
Mm.
They're very vocal, and they are, as I said, inquisitive and that, like. But you have to encourage them to come outside as well, because their natural... the thing that they're most naturally afraid of is actually predators in the sky.
Okay.
So they're terrified of overhead planes. Okay. Like, we had a terrible thing here a couple of years ago with a hot air balloon. We frightened and killed a lot of them.
Really?
Yeah, because their natural environment is underneath a forest floor.
Yeah.
Under a canopy of trees.
Okay.
But they're not exposed to, like, hawks, eagles, kestrels, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why if you were to build a poultry house... in the middle of a field and bank up the soil outside.
Yeah.
And if you looked out and all you seen was the grass meeting the skyline, well then you would, when they look out and all they see is this, the grass meeting the sky, they will not go outside.
Oh.
Because they're terrified of open air spaces. Yeah. So that's what you see here. We've planted a lot of apple trees. There's willow down there. And then at the end then there's birch and alder and oak trees planted to encourage them to come outside.
And I know this might sound like a stupid question, but do they fly?
No, not particularly. They can more do a sort of like a jump up from one thing to another.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's in charge.
Okay. He'll keep his territory, but it's really important to have a few of those in the flock.
Of course.
Because literally there'll be a bitch fight otherwise in the barn at night. So, but you'll see him stamping his authority. See the way he's kind of, his feathers now, and once his, he'll cock his tail feathers, and he'll change colour then as well. So, yeah. So you see the way he's going really, really red now?
Yeah.
So, and so that's a show of authority. So, and you see he's a totally different colour to the hens.
Even the way he's standing above them is very territorial.
Yeah, so you can see by the size of him, right? But he's not, as if you look at the other birds, see the nice breast meat on him. See this? But on him, he doesn't have that breast meat. Yeah. He has more leg meat.
Yeah.
So he's bigger and taller. But for your customer, like when somebody contacts us or rings us, they'll ask me, and is it a hen? And they promise me it's a hen. And that's the older generation person, because they know more about their food and their turkeys, and they know they want a hen turkey. They don't want a tom that has huge big legs on it and not a lot of breast meat.
Actually, anybody over at the age of kind of 60, 65 will always put their order in for a hen. Yeah,
wow.
Because they'll know, because they've grown up killing the bird at home for Christmas. So it was part of Christmas, was rearing a few turkeys, and they always knew that it was the hen that was like, look at the herd there. Do you see the way, like, I know we're laughing about breasts, but you have lovely breasts there. You can see the conformation of the two breasts there. So like when you think of your crown of turkey, you're just getting those two breasts there and there.
Yeah.
But of course, one of our objectives is to get all of our customers to eat every morsel and appreciate every morsel of the bird.
This paddock here, we could add in an extra 800 turkeys into the paddock and we would still be meeting the standard of the free range. So we're way above that. We kept on the same number for the last couple of years because it's manageable for the size of the house and the shed and all that, you know. It's something that every year the sales, rearing the turkeys is only half the work. Selling them is a lot of work as well.
And in terms of it, you mentioned free range and obviously they've tons of space here. Like I know with chickens there is an official standard for free range, with pork there isn't. Is there with turkeys?
So with turkeys, yes there is, and it's because there are a lot of people, and some people say they're free range, or some people lead you to think they're free range, but they're not. So there is actually a list published on the Department of Agriculture website of all the official certified free range turkey producers in Ireland. There's about 30 of us.
Okay. And it's very important to actually go for your certified free range, because then you know that they've been inspected for square meterage of per bird and all of the ethical standards. As somebody who's free range might aspire to being free range but wouldn't have gone through that whole inspection. The inspection process is very stringent.
The inspection process, like the size of the floor area in the shed for the amount of birds, the amount of feeders I have, the amount of water drinkers I have, your water supply system has to be tested once a year to make sure there's no bacteria in that. Where you're buying your feed from, that has to be certified as well. All down to where you're buying your chicks in from, the whole slaughtering process. Everything is regulated. There's an awful lot of paperwork in it, and that's why it's important to actually... There are some people say, oh, well, we're above the free range standards. But if you're above them, you should be part of it. You can't call yourself, and you shouldn't call yourself, and there are people call themselves free range that aren't actually certified. So they don't have to do the bacteria testing that I have to do before slaughtering to make sure your birds are free and healthy and all that sort of stuff. So it is something that we do. Now, okay, there may be people and they're rearing, you know, 20, 30 turkeys in the backyard or whatever it is. And if you're buying one of them, that's fine, because you know that person yourself and you can verify that their turkey is outside and their turkey is of a standard of thing. But if you're buying off somebody who is leading to the thing, oh, we're above the standards and we're brilliant and we're doing this and we're doing that, but unless they actually say they're certified, it means they're not subject to inspections. And it's sort of, nobody really knows what's going on there.
And so, probably a very obvious question, how come these instead of chickens?
Well, it's not a very obvious question. I mean, we had a look at chickens. This is just a Christmas business to us. So when you go for something that's a year round, you're into a whole different competitive spectrum. Yeah. So what we kind of aspire to do is to do the best possible Christmas dinner and put all that we can into it and bite the customer into every part of our story, because we're so open and transparent and open book and delight for everyone to learn from us in the hope that we might also inspire other people to do it. But chickens, I suppose we've had a look at it. Yeah. The margins on chickens, unless first of all you're doing huge volumes and doing a very consistent volume, you know, it's a whole different ball game. Also, with chickens, we would have to probably set up our own home slaughter plant as well. Yeah. You know, and just the transport costs of going to somewhere on a consistent basis.
It's really, yeah. If you're going to do a premium product, you have to have the customers, and for doing the chickens, the turkeys, it's the most important meal of the whole year. Mm. And people want to know exactly where it comes from and how much has gone into it. Yeah. And for us, we can be the very best at doing turkeys. If we're doing chickens, you're still going to be always held to the price of the supermarket chicken. Mm. And people are always going to compare you to that. So it is something that we haven't really...
The brand and everything. You were going to call it Olivia's
still,
Chickens.
I still want to.
I'd still love to. No, I really would love to because
we
do feel on restaurant menus in the Irish food space, there definitely is a gap there on the menu for a standout chicken. Mm. You know, but it has to be viable. And we see at the moment probably the biggest mantra for Christmas is the farmers not getting their prices. Mm. And would the customer really give us that price for the chicken we would want to do? You know, regardless of our marketing or bringing the customer right into our story, as Owen says, would we have a year-round customer there? I suppose that's the question. Mm. You know, so
we haven't ruled it out. Yes. Keep an eye on it.
Keep an eye.
So we originally got into turkeys when I got 3 geese at a country fair, brought them home. We're going to do them for our own Christmas table, and then the fox took them, and I was really annoyed and upset about it. So Olivia said, why don't we try doing something else? Why don't we try doing a few birds for Christmas, trying a few turkeys? So I said, brilliant idea. Okay, so I decided, right, I'm not going to mention another word about it. I'm just going to go and get a couple of turkeys. So Olivia had in mind that I might get 3 turkeys to replace the 3 geese, but I came back with a box of 100 turkeys.
That seems like something you would do, yeah.
So I she didn't speak to me for a couple of weeks, but I said, well, listen, I'm the qualified farmer, you're the qualified marketeer, I'll farm them, you sell them. It doesn't quite work like that, but we sold out the first year, and then we've grown it now every year since.
How old are all of your flock?
So they would have been hatched on the 2nd of July. They're hatched in England. Okay. And then they're sexed.
They always arrive to us on Independence Day. the 4th of July is usually
independently born.
Well, it was it's usually it's that week. They were hatched on the 2nd and they landed here on the 3rd.
Yeah. There's no commercial hatchery in Ireland, just to say. Okay. That's why they come from the UK, and that would be our little pinch of Brexit and our fear of Brexit as well.
Thought of having a hatchery here?
No. It's not commercially viable because the Irish market is not big enough to sustain one hatchery, because the size of them in England, there's about 4 hatcheries in England. So we're just a tiny drop in the market to them.
Who are a really, really premium hatchery. They do a fantastic job. They'd be known worldwide. So they come in from Kelly's. And the first time Owen got the birds, did you tell the story about the shoebox?
So I cleaned out everything out of the back of the Jeep to go and collect the package of birds. And I arrived over and they handed me a box. It was like, you know, like the pair of Hunter Wellies, pair of Wellington shoebox with your wellies in it. A little bit bigger than that. And in that was 102 turkey chicks. Because you have to understand, you know, like a tray of eggs.
Yeah.
Well, a tray of eggs, actually, each egg, they're only that size.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine on a tray, they're all sort of packaged separately. But when you actually take those 24 that's in a tray and put them together, it's a much smaller bundle.
Yeah.
So like you have 100 in a very small box. And it's like,
so like
I came home with them
like,
on the passenger seat.
Where are they? And they're on the passenger seat.
With the seatbelt around them.
But all these little, you just pop the lid and all these little heads stick up at you. And it's just, it's the cutest thing. Yeah. But yeah. So then you release them out into the, we just start them in the stable under all the heat lamps. And literally Owen lives in the barn for the first 6 weeks. Mm. Because they're really a bit thick.
Yeah.
And it's not,
you don't,
it's
you can't
not
say
cold.
That. You just say they're not intelligent.
It's not cold or it's not, but they smother like anything. So, you know, a pony might come into a barn, a kid might run past the stable, and they just all shuffle into the corner, and you could lose 20 or 30 chicks just in a flash.
We have cameras to watch them.
Yeah. Yes.
So we can watch them from the house. We got the cameras, you know, because it means that even during the night, you can actually wake up, flick on the phone, and
the turkey
and check on it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you need to, because at that stage, like, it is your... Yeah. Your
but,
bread and
but
butter.
Getting back to your question on the age, so just another difference between us and the commercial turkey is that the commercial turkey, Owen's more technically minded than I am on this now, will be hatched around September. Ours are with us for another 2 months. Mm. So we're allowing them to get to full maturity on a really slow basis and enjoying. I was just saying to Patrick, like, the field is in its worst state at the moment because it's been eaten to a scut. Like, when they're released out onto this, the grass is taller than them. It's in a meadow. When we have a forage crop the whole length there of the headland, and then they're fed consistently. Like, you'll see there's old bits of corn and pumpkin and everything around the field. Mm. So we're constantly working with any farmers around us that are growing anything that's seasonal, and we're feeding it to the turkeys. So they just forage all day and pick away.
So that's like the fodder crop.
Oh my God.
See this? Yeah. And that was planted the whole way from here up to corner and up to
So it's about fence height.
It's about 4 foot in height.
Yeah. Human
and
height.
It's curlew, almost. Kale, brassicas, cabbages, pumpkins, everything else.
Delicious.
And
seed,
but
yeah.
The great thing about that is that encourages them to go outside.
Yeah.
Because it runs right up to the back door, and they come out the back door and they run through it. It's like a little maze from
and it's kind of encouraging them out
shelter,
instead of forcing them out in a way
and security and everything as well. Yes. Yeah.
And of course you can see this if anyone gives you a whole bird and says this is a whole bird, or like olden days comes in with a bird over their shoulder. The one way you can tell whether it's free range is to open up the gizzard, and the gizzard will show you their last dinner, but it'll also show you the grit and everything that they've used as a catalyst to break down everything into their system. And that's the real free range bird. So we have grit bats in the paddock to help them do that as well.
Okay.
So Owen actually puts out grit.
What you need to do is you need to go onto the Department of Agriculture list, you need to find your nearest certified free range turkey producer and make sure the bird you're buying is actually certified as free range. Don't be going with somebody that's putting up nice pictures of birds outside, because we've had it here where actually pictures or images that we put up on Facebook have been used on other people's ads.
Yeah.
So
easy to.
You need to know where your food comes from. You need to do a little bit of homework and research, and say, this is my bird. This is where it came from. This is the farmer's name. This is phone number. I've people ringing me that are ordering my birds through retailers in Dublin that want to ring me and says, how old are your birds and how long are they outside and all that. And the age of the bird as well, which we mentioned earlier on, was very important. It's like, you know, the difference between people, to those who don't understand, the difference between the age is like the difference of mutton and lamb. The mutton is older and it's far stronger, more flavour in it, and lamb isn't. It's more tender but doesn't have the same flavour. If you have a turkey that's 3 months old versus a turkey that's 6 months old, the older turkey is going to have the natural flavour in it. It's going to taste the way turkeys used to taste to people years gone by. While if you're getting a turkey that's only 3 months old, there's no flavour in it. It's very bland, right? So that's what we're doing here. They're slowly reared. They're traditional. We're actually, there's different standards. If we were talking about the standards of the official standards of free range, we're actually traditional free range, which means our birds are outside for more than 140 days.
Okay.
So we are of a higher standard, but we don't mention the fact traditional free range because it only gets people confused.
Yeah.
They don't understand enough. So, but no, the older your bird is, the more flavour it has. And again, by them being outside eating pumpkins, carrots, apples, corns, all that sort of stuff, all adds to flavour as well.
So what you're hearing down there are the geese.
Quite loud.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the geese are like our watchdogs. So anyone that comes in the gate, the geese just go nuts. And when they go, it's a really, really quiet place.
Yeah.
And you know, people ask, are the geese aggressive? they're the quirkiest just species you will ever encounter in your life. Like, they just don't cope with change or a change in their routine, or if there was a bucket outside their shed or anything on a particular morning, they're not coming out. And they do hiss, but our geese, because again they're so used to owning everything, they're not vicious. They'll follow you in that.
What was interesting there is you mentioned that when they're younger, they'd smother toward.
That's our biggest fear, actually.
What's interesting is, even as a truck went past there, they start to move away, and they're over 100 days old at this point, and they still have that inherent kind of fear of noises coming from afar.
And Owen will actually tell you, like, our worst fear at the moment is microlight, drone, even helicopters or anything going overhead, because they see it as predator. Mm-hmm. So they just all run for cover. You were doing a chat the other morning, and they
last
just...
Last Thursday, I think it was, on the Ireland's Farmers Twitter account, I was doing a live broadcast, and as I was doing it, I could just hear this flutter, and it was a flutter of all the birds taking off as quick as they could to get into the shelter of the barn. Wow. And it's just like something's just happened. I looked up, and there was, in the distance, a little aeroplane flying over. And you wouldn't even notice yourself. But they did, and they all ran to the barn. Now, a couple of years back, about maybe 5-6 years ago, one Saturday afternoon, we were here, and if you see the big tree there just above the pig ark, lovely sunny day, and a hot air balloon passed over. And a hot air balloon passed over. And they all ran to underneath that tree. There was no pigs there at the time. That was in fodder trap. And they all ran to that, and they ran under the tree, past the tree, and hit the wire fence. And there's 27 of them killed. They all smothered on top of each other. And, like, what can you do? Yeah. Like, I've contacted the Irish Aviation Authority and that sort of stuff, and well, there's nothing they can do about it. Like, but I know that there are some big scale free range chicken producers, and they have no fly zones over their houses for that reason, because it is, they are not the most intelligent birds.
Okay.
They're famous for their size and flavour.
Have they got any other health issues?
No, once they're outside and reared in open space and
but
fresh air and all that.
Biosecurity is always important when it comes to poultry, you know, so you always have to mind your stock and just make sure if anyone else is coming into the farm from another farm or anything like that. You just always have to be aware, you know.
And part of that as well is, in the certification for the free range, we're not allowed to actually feed them any whole grain meal and stuff like that outside. Because otherwise you'd have other birds coming in, like grey crows, magpies, jackdaws, all other birds coming in, and they could come from some other place and spread disease with them. And same as like water, you can't have any puddles of water outside in the field because there could be other birds drinking or another bird flying over and does a poo in it, and again cross contamination. So there is things like that you have to be aware of.
Yeah, and just one, you're probably going to say, or maybe the question's been asked before, why are you guys not organic? So just to say, we had a look, we've had an ongoing debate and a look at organics, and organics is where our heart is. But when we've looked at the sourcing of feed and everything we do, for us to keep our birds, which are already a price conscious a premium bird in the market for Christmas, and as we say, it's the most important meal of the year, and that's kind of why we package it and everything as well. If we were to go organic, in order for us to keep it at the round the price mark that we're at, we would really need to source our feed in the UK and bring it in from afar.
It's
the only option. So instead, we've chosen and made the conscious decision to get our feed from Tom Dillon down the road, from Paul Moorhead, from all the local farmers that roll the barley and wheat and everything for us, and we know that they've come. It's come from their fields, and it's within such a short distance from our farm. So the whole story, even when the birds go to slaughter over in Hogan's, it's only about 5 miles as the crow flies from us. So it's stress free. So our whole system, from the day they arrive here till the day they're boxed, they're sold then from the farm, we try and get as many people to come and experience the farm on the days of Christmas as well, that we're keeping it as local as we can, and just keeping the faces behind the product.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Christmas is obviously turkey time, but 6-ish weeks beforehand is Thanksgiving, and for a lot of American expats living here and people who just have Friendsgiving, which is cute and everything, there is a demand for turkey suddenly. earlier in the year than you'd probably traditionally go with. Did you sell any this year for Thanksgiving? Yeah. And does that mean that basically the birds are just less mature, essentially?
No, it's not really they're less mature, but you take out some of the bigger birds.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, the 6 weeks isn't going to make a whole pile of difference out of when you're looking at a six-month span. As I said, like, compared to buying something that's only 3 months of age, it's still way past that. So we had, I think, about 20 birds went out for Thanksgiving. Which is not a huge amount.
Don't really
but
market it. Yeah. No. That come to us.
Yeah. But it is nice, and it's getting more and more popular.
We're about halfway through this episode now, and just want to say, if you are listening to this in the period leading up to Christmas, you can still pre-order a turkey from Owen and Olivia if you'd like to. There's pickup points not only at the farm itself, which is in County Meath, just off the M3. You can also pick it up at the Honest to Goodness Market up in Dublin, as well as at the Castle Townhouse car park on Monday the 23rd. All the details are on the website, which is maprathfarm.ie. That's maprathfarm.ie. And believe us, it'll be well worth it on Christmas Day. Still to come, we've got some really great cooking tips from Olivia, and we also get to meet the geese who are at the other end of the farm. And of course, if you're enjoying this episode of Chew the Fat, we would really appreciate rating, subscribing, sharing and whatnot on whatever social platforms and podcast providers you do be enjoying us on.
How are you choosing your own Christmas bird
out of entire flock?
So Anna has a ring on the leg somewhere.
No, I do not. I keep a pet turkey. I don't actually kill it, though.
Okay. Who eats it, though?
Oh, we all eat.
Yeah. Not my turkey.
Oh, no, okay. We're really proud of, like, no, we're really, really, it's a really proud moment when we actually get to cook our own bird for our own table and, it's usually whatever's left.
So it's only ham for Christmas.
I'm going to tell you a very quick one, right? So at Christmas time, doing the shop, dealing with people, hundreds of people, people are very stressed out and they're very much on edge and they come here and you have to be so diplomatic with them. So,
and a lot of them are sent on errands as well to collect the turkey.
Husbands.
Yeah.
Husband.
Yes.
So I'll get, there's one particular one where this gentleman arrived, I won't name him anyhow, but when he arrived out anyhow, he picked up his bird and he was meeting an awful lot of other local people and it was all in a box and so was everybody else's in a box as well. And he put the box down and he was chatting to somebody. The children were running around or having a look at the animals because we bring in like calf, sheep, pigs and all that. So it's a very much a festive thing and that. And he's drinking his mulled wine and he's chatting away and he's there for a good half an hour. And then he shoots off and it's Christmas Eve. And then I had to do one more turkey drop on the way to my mother's house for I had and try to fit in my Christmas shopping as well on Christmas Eve. So I get this.
Again, husbands.
So I get this. Yeah. So I get this.
Species.
Yeah. So I get this phone call from. And he says, straight away, it's like, this is here. Listen, I booked an £18 turkey. I ordered an £18 turkey. I paid for an £18 turkey. And now I'm at home here. I discover it's only £14. You better fix this. And I said, well, hold on a second.
11, actually. Yeah,
maybe it was 11. Yeah, it was. And I said, well, hold on a second. Now, I says, I just thought he might have picked up somebody else's box. I says, look, no problem. I says, listen, is it still in the bag? Because if it's in the bag, I'll take it back. No problem at all. It's still in the bag. Yeah, it's still in the bag. It still has a crimp on it. And he says, and the bag says £18 as well. I said, well, hold on. If the bag says £18, that scales is on the button. I says, can you send me a picture? So send me a picture. And I rang him back and said, Mark, I know by looking at that bird it's £18. And he says, don't you start telling me. He says, I'm a solicitor and I know what you've done. And I paid for an £18 bird and now you're trying to tell me and I have all these people coming for dinner and I have to cook dinner for all these people and I don't want them coming to my house and you better fix this. And he says, I have people coming as well on Stephen's Day and I have to have a big bird for dinner the next day as well. And I said, well, tell you what, cook the bird tomorrow and I'll drop you another bird then for a take. Do you think I want to be cooking two birds? And you've not heard the end of this. So I was like, okay, calm down.
To leave
Christmas. I'm like, get our turkey, put it in the Jeep. I'm on the way out the door. With my turkey, one other I had to deliver to I had to deliver to somebody else and then go and do my Christmas shopping. So I'm on a takeaway coffee sandwich, racing out the door, and then the phone rings. It was one of the quickest conversations I ever had in my life. I was like, Hi, Owen, this here. Just letting you know that my wife just came in the back door and she just showed me that the scales only go as far as 11 pounds. It probably is actually 18 pounds. So thanks very much. Good luck. You don't need to be able to... Bye-bye.
No apology. No, no nothing. No. Christmas Eve rescued.
Yeah. Oh, I was looking forward to that court case and all. And I was just... But
best, there's always one drama every Christmas Eve.
The best thing is that I know so many of his friends. And his and I didn't.
I can't believe you mentioned the name.
I didn't realize this. Yeah. I didn't. You can beep it out.
I get to, the thing is, I get to use the beep for the first time on this podcast. So like normally I'm like, oh, they swore, it's fine. But I get to actually beep for defamation reasons. I'm really proud of this.
It's actually funnier that it's not actually a curse. But anyhow, it was only when some of his friends started saying to me, "Oh, was over and got a turkey. Did he messed up the weight or something? Did he?" I says, "Oh, he did. Oh. He did. Yeah." But when he dropped, but he didn't tell them. He dropped the line that I'm a solicitor and you haven't heard the last of this. So yeah, but I've had other people as well where they rang and I'd be doing like the market, the Honest Goodness Market in Dublin. Yeah. Do drop off points in Dublin as well for people's convenience. And this lady rang and says, "I'm at your farm to collect my goose. Where are you?" I said, "Well, I'm at the market in Dublin." So well, I'm here and where's my goose? I said, "Well, it's not there. Like you'll have to wait till I come home."
The pot.
Yeah, she said like, "Anna, don't break that." And says, "But did you not get a text of our opening hours?" "Oh, I did, but I'm far too busy to read it." I said, "Okay, well, you'll have to drop back this evening and collect it." She says, "Okay, fine. Yeah. This is a real inconvenience." So she came back that evening, even being on the farm here. Later on the evening, she came back and it was dark though, and she got lost. And she rang me and rang me and rang me. But I was in the middle of doing turkey collections and I was trying to answer the phone to her and give her directions and where are you? "Well, I don't know where I am, but where is your farm?" I said, "Well, like, the same place it was earlier on."
There's actually a book in collecting the Christmas turkey because you see so much consumer behaviour. It's such a snapshot of family dynamics.
Well, we've both been in retail in the past and Christmas. I used to love working Christmas Eve just because I used to get everything discounted at the end of it all.
Actually a clever ploy.
Yeah. It was like, "Oh, what, Gladys, you go off with your families, it's absolutely fine. I'll do Christmas Eve," and then I'm like, "Yay, everything's reduced to 50p. Fantastic." But it's so interesting to see how people who are regular customers just flip in those 24-48 hours because they're determined to get a turkey and they have to have that red cabbage. It's crazy.
And when she came back to the farm, she stormed in, give out to me, because as if I had moved the farm from where it was earlier on that day.
Of course you did, though.
Took her goose, turned around, and disappeared. Never even paid for it. I thought to myself, now, really? I'm not going to say a word to her, because if I start shouting, "Hey, come back here, you, Mrs. whatever," I don't need to start her row. So I says, "I'm just going to leave it. I have her number."
Yeah,
I have her number.
I was just going to say. I'm going to wait to see
how far she gets before she calms down and realises what she's done.
Yeah. Where the laneway was.
Yeah. Oh, no. She was well home. Yeah, but because I didn't mind, because all I knew was she was going to have to drop back and pay me. Yeah.
Are you able to find it this time on your own?
This is like the countryside version of tables and restaurants cancelling around this time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's for that reason as well that this year is the first year we have asked everybody to put a €20 deposit on their bird. Smart. Because you will hear as well on the weeks coming up to Christmas, like, you can't blame people, but my husband's after winning one in the golf tournament. Fabulous. Or, you know, I'm just after getting a lovely bird from the neighbour, you know. But
as well that maybe there's two people come for dinner and they've both booked a turkey, unknown to each other, and then they don't turn up for it. And it does happen. Did you both go into your mother's house for dinner and you're both booked a turkey because your mother probably said it's the both of you, make sure it's booked.
Well, in fairness, that has been kind of the way in the past when I was on these 50 cent reduction things at the end of the day, and you'd have one end, my mother on the phone in the supermarket being like, "Have you got the turkey yet?" Grant just throws the one away into that fridge while I have another one in the car.
Savage at Christmas time. Oh, it just brings out the worst in people. Yeah. So pressurized, so much anxiety.
So unnecessary.
It is. But I can understand that people are under so much pressure, and it's the most important meal of the year. Yeah. And it's all about, and I think that people need to just take a step back and say, right, we have the best turkey in the country, and everything after that doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's all that counts on Christmas Day, really, isn't it? Forget absolutely. The presents, get the good turkey, it's that's all that counts.
That's pretty much our attitude yeah. this year. So.
Who in your house cooks the turkey?
Oh, I wouldn't be allowed in the kitchen on Christmas Day.
Yeah. I will tell you, if we had our business together, I will share with you my recipe. And actually, all of the birds come, we give a recipe card, but we call the turkey card, it's the gin and tonic turkey. So all you have to do is wrap it in the muslin cloth and then go and enjoy your gin and tonic.
Oh,
so literally nothing else.
Subscribe to that.
So I've had ladies of, like one lady, Teresa in work, who's been cooking it one way for 34 years and her mother before her, and I'm not to be told how to cook it. And so I pleaded with her. She got two turkeys and I pleaded with her to cook the first turkey one way. And I gave her our meter square muslin cloth. And I told her very simply to get her a pound of Kerrygold butter or her, quinoa butter or just really good Irish butter, and put it in a pot with some of, your bouquet garni and just your little bit of herb, salt and pepper, well seasoned, melt it down and then soak your muslin in it. Soak it completely in the pot.
Yeah.
Okay, so your muslin is then literally dripping in butter.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
And then you take it out and you just hug your turkey with the muslin, like wrap it really, really tightly in the muslin. So that is all of the base stain and all of the moisture that your full bird needs for its entire cooking time.
Right.
So there is no need to put anything under the skin. There's no need to season. There's no need to baste at any point. And there's no need to treat your legs any differently from the breast because the muslin works it all out.
Oh.
And after your cooking time, which is only relative to whatever weight your bird is, you peel off your muslin and your bird is 100% evenly browned and beautifully cooked through the muslin. So there's no further browning time or cooking time or anything. All you have to do then is let it rest, and we let it rest for about 30 minutes at least.
Is a crown exact same or
don't say the C word, you don't
buy them.
Oh god, he asked that question.
Unfortunately.
A what? The program on Netflix.
Yes,
isn't it?
That's the thing you put on while it's cooking.
The crown is that's the only thing.
So,
I'm too busy to watch Netflix.
No, of course. Yeah, so absolutely. I just find the wonderful thing about the muslin is it sympathizes the different cooking instructions that you need normally for the leg or for the breast or for the different parts of the bird. It just brings it all into the fold and you have nothing to do, only literally drink your gin and tonic. Your crown, you can do that. Or another way I love to deal with just breast meat is to overnight it in buttermilk. And then there's always the debate as well, do you brine your turkey? So like if you go down to Ballymaloe, Dorina will nearly always brine the turkey overnight. Put it into a bath of like your salt and water overnight. It just relaxes all the meat and just the fibers. But ours, because again our birds are so slow reared and they're a little bit more mature, we don't think we need to do that if you wrap it in the muslin.
Okay. That's good to know, because I was going to ask about brining there.
Yes.
So that saves me 2 days of work. So that's great. Thank you.
I don't think so. But honestly, the muslin, so it's kind of spread everywhere now, this the phenomenon of the muslin. It's something that the likes of, Dorina would always say to cook in muslin, and that's the way they do it down in Ballymaloe. And that's where I learned how to do it first. And so I'm not saying it's my recipe or anything, but we have converted so many people. So we now sell the muslin cloths in the farm shop and we pre-cut them and
very
everything.
Clever, yeah.
So people just come, they buy our goose fat. So the goose fat, you can hear the geese now. The goose fat, again.
We're talking about you.
So again, it's about appreciating every morsel of the animal. It's having respect for them. They're sacrificing themselves for your Christmas lunch. So, but so the fat, especially around the intestines, and that is so amazing.
Yeah.
And we render it all down, and it's Anna's Christmas business. So Anna, age 9, it's her Christmas shop.
How entrepreneurial
of
her.
Yeah. Be careful, she doesn't give change.
Yeah. Oh, you told me about this before.
Yeah, she's lethal.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Here's 20 quid, no so change.
Anna will be selling goose fat, chestnuts, and painted horseshoes.
Oh, how
lovely. Yeah.
And so then that's the January sale sorted then.
Yeah,
perfect.
Exactly. Yeah, so Owen held off letting these guys out until you came today, so you can just see them getting out, so they're just really happy to get out. So
it's
we have about...
Look at them flapping their wings and running over to us. My God.
Yeah. So we've about a third of the flock gone already. So there's a gentleman's lunch in Kildare Street every year at the beginning of December. So they have a goose lunch, and so the geese went off for that lunch this week. And then sometimes as well around festive time, kind of people are either not here for Christmas or family are visiting or that, and they just like to have a goose instead of a turkey, you know.
A goose is quite an old Irish option.
Would you
option.
Say it's more traditional than turkey?
Yeah, absolutely. So the original tradition was that a goose was eaten around Michaelmas.
Yes.
So Michaelmas was at the end of September. And that was kind of very much the Irish people, again, in tune with the seasons. And now we find a lot of people will have a turkey for Christmas and a goose for New Year. And, of course, in Europe, goose is big on New Year's Eve as well. So the goose we treat as game, and the turkey is treated as poultry.
Yeah.
So the geese, when slaughtered, we hang them for 6-7 days. So it's just to let all of the fibres and everything just completely relax, and just not particularly mature, but they're very happy to be out.
It's one of the funniest things ever, because you're like, it's like watching an airplane on a runway,
and
you're just seeing it go at absolute great speed, and you're like, lift, but the legs are just going crazy underneath.
And actually, they normally go, it's just not a great day today, but they normally go, they have their own stream here as well.
Yeah.
And at this time of the year, just the last couple of weeks, of course, Owen doesn't really like them going swimming, because if they're going swimming, they're bringing their body temperature down, and their body has to work harder, so they're not putting on weight. So, you know, the poem that says the days are getting shorter and the goose is getting fat.
Yeah,
so you want them to be fattening at this stage. So at the moment, they've as much food as they want in front of them at all times, but you don't really want them doing all that much exercise.
Going
so
out for an hour or two in the afternoon.
And you don't want them on. You want them on a little bit of water, but not deep water.
Yeah.
Water, as you see in the river down here, that they can go into the water and wash, but not swim. If they're swimming, it's basically effectively like being on a treadmill, and they will sit on the water all day, as like being on a treadmill. And they're paddling like mad, and they're just losing weight.
Okay.
So it's important that for the last 6 weeks you don't let them out as much, to put some extra weight on them.
Mm.
That sounds like the diet we're on, actually.
Eat everything in sight and very little
exercise. As little as possible. Yeah. The thing about them as well is they're very quirky.
Yeah.
Where if like a couple of years ago, before we had this setup of the outdoor pen and all that, we used to get a feed bin dropped up between where the dumper is and the shed, and it was a big black bin, and it'd be full of meal. So I'd drive in here, and a neighbour'd lift off from his craft and drop it over there. But if he dropped it in the wrong place, they'd lose their life.
Sure.
They'd go, hold on a second, that's strange, that wasn't there yesterday, or it's in a different place, something's moved, something's different, I'm not going out.
Oh.
Or I'm not going in, they wouldn't go near it. They're very quirky like that.
That's so weird. It's just so weird seeing the different kind of intelligence, as you say, of the two types of birds completely.
Yes. Yeah, they are, and they're very different as opposed to waterfowl now. And these, they would be an awful lot more vocal, and people have this impression of being territorial, and they're very misunderstood.
Yeah.
They're not aggressive, they're territorial, where out here you can walk into field and they will not attack you, they'll not go near you, they are quite
plastic and move away from it, because they're in a huge big area here, as you can see. They have the wonder of all this, what you can see, right? But if you had two geese in your back garden, the back garden's too small, and then they take on, that's their territory, and then because they're interacting with people so much, they take on the persona of a person, and they see you as being a threat to their territory, and therefore they will attack you. And they can be, now, it's well known, like a goose could break a child's arm.
Yeah.
They're a lot stronger than you think.
Yeah.
But they're enjoyable. One of the things I love about the geese is that we're very proud of is they never leave the farm. So they're all plucked here by hand, hung in our own fridges here, and then we clean them out then as people are collecting them.
Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Is it all hens here?
No, no. See, the sex of the goose isn't as important as if for turkeys, because the goose and the gander will take the joint hatching eggs. They'll take on turns to sit on the eggs.
Wow.
Mm. Proper order.
Yeah. Equality for all geese.
So and geese have been known to live up to 25 years. And for that reason, there's a lot of myth and mythology about them, because if you think 25 years, but if you went back, let's say, 1,000 years ago, people only lived, their average life expectancy was only about 25, 30. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a goose would live as old as a person. So then it was always in myth and legend that you would come back as a goose or a swan or some animal like that.
Is there a way of distinguishing the males and females here? Yes. I think I can guess, but go on.
I think I see balls.
Or is it just really big asses?
No, that's just fat.
Is it? Okay.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Yeah.
Why goose fat's so precious? Because it just hangs around the place. No, it's you.
It dangles there, yeah.
In a pig. Again, I love the tradition of the goose. We have so many, again, older people. And everything we do is kind of from the past generation. And we love that so many older people come to our gate around Christmas time and even into January. And they're looking for the goose fat for their pains and for arthritis and their joints and everything. And we have the same man who comes every year, drives over from Mullingar, and it's always for his knees, and he loves our goose fat, and and then of course the goose fat for the best roast potatoes ever. So
Anna sells goose fat at our Christmas shop here.
That's entrepreneurial spirit.
How much are you selling your jars for this year?
Small jars for $2.50 and the big jars for €5.
And that's very exact reasonable. Change only, isn't that right?
Exact change.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Doesn't do change.
Don't need a float.
Any cards or
card?
No, only cold hard cash. Anna.
Check post loader.
Very good.
Yes.
Wow.
The sexing them is you have to turn them upside down and have a look at them, or else if you can hear them, there's a difference between the male and the female.
Oh, okay.
When they're I suppose quacking is what you call it.
But there's not as much, you know, when you see a goose, you think they're quite a big bird, but there's not as much eating on a goose. Really, a goose, when people ask you, oh, I'm not sure about a goose, we really say it's like a big duck, really, how it looks. It's obviously, it's much gamier meat, but you just, it's all, again, in how you cook it. Yeah. So we say really hot oven and then really slow, really, really slow, and have respect for that fat. And yeah, so it's just so delicious. Cooking a goose is a little trickier, you know, as in if you don't abide by the rules, you're going to pay with a tougher meat.
Yeah.
But if you cook it really, really slowly, it's just so delicious.
Is it hard having 3 4. Small ones?
Yeah, well, 3 women.
Yeah.
As I always
looking at it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's blessed,
Owen,
I'm sure.
Can do nothing wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But they're great. Anna's an amazing little farmer. Mm. Like, seriously, we could go away for the day and she'll do the basic jobs. Not that we really ask her, but she'll let birds in and out and, you know. Anna's great, isn't she?
If I'm going away, she's the only one I leave in charge of the farm.
Why is your eyes looking over at Olivia?
Age 9.
He's including me in that. As I say, I have 4 kids, 3 girls and Owen.
Well, you're the townie. No, but it is a family effort here, and the great thing about it is because it is poultry, and the kids are able to do the little jobs and get involved in all that as well, you know.
But we will have, like, so during the spring then we do our kind of, well, we finish off our lambs in kind of June and July because we only grass finish them. So we do kind of lambs and full lambs to our friends and butcher them as they want. We custom butcher them in a box. But we don't finish them on any grain, so they're like, the lamb is like butter. And then we have all our rare breeds, Oxford Sandy and Black pigs as well. So but the girls at this stage will be, you know, is that our lamb? Is that our pork? Oh, yeah, you can taste it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or when there's no rashers left in the freezer, Daddy, that pig is ready to go in the front field. Yeah.
I can see it.
Notorious.
Yeah. But it's great that their natural instinct. I mean, I think we don't give children that benefit. We shelter them, especially more urban kids as well. We shelter them from that information. We don't respect children to make their own choices as they grow up on food choices, you know. So yeah,
about that whole process. Really? Yeah, adults are more squeamish about the whole process of animals and where they come from than actual kids will accept it as part of, okay, so that's what we're doing. like part of the mobile farm, I'll have, there's one of them is a Dexter.
Who's that small one?
That's the Dexter.
So cute.
Yeah. So Owen uses her for the mobile farm.
Oh, so I have seen her before.
So is she the one who went to the pub in Dingle?
Yes.
She's fond of the little Tibble, yes.
Yes.
And Dungarvan as well, yes.
Her legs are so tiny.
Yeah.
So she's called 50, because as you can see, her ear tag is 50.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So when we're doing part of mobile farm as well, is we don't give the animals names because they're all productive farm animals.
Yeah.
It's not a pet farm. It's a productive farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's all about education on each animal, kids, teach them exactly what each animal is, because a lot of schools and a lot of kids don't realise the difference between a goat and a sheep and a cow and a donkey at schools I've been to. So what each animal is, what it takes to look after that animal, what that animal produces and how it ends up possibly in your kitchen. And it's all age appropriate, so the smaller kids, it's all about, you know, like, guess what happens if the hen sits on the eggs and what do you call the mammy chicken, all that sort of stuff. While the older ones, like, how many days does it have sitting the eggs?
Yeah.
How many hours of daylight? Sure, you know this. How many hours of daylight does a hen need before it lays an egg? And I'll explain that to kids in the schools, that this animal has more information in its ear than your passport. And that animal will have more health checks done within the first 2 weeks of its life than most babies leave in the Holly Street Hospital.
Yeah.
But can I see the we're allowed to keep that information on our animals, but not on our people. If the government turned around and said we have the DNA of every single person in Ireland, they'd be, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah,
there'd be uproar. But they are entitled to keep it on our animals, and there's a good reason for it. But we need to be, as food producers and consumers in Ireland, we need to be publicising the fact about how good the meat is we have. We need to be putting it on restaurant menus in Ireland. Grass fed, Irish, hormone free, steroid free beef.
Yeah.
Because American customers and tourists coming here to this country, they don't know that our beef is grass fed. Yeah. And we take it for granted. So we need to be publicising that more, because tourism is a big part of this picture.